And again, as we look at the book of Daniel, we're going to see all the way through this book that God is in control. And there's peace in that for me, because as I turn on the news at night and I look at the situation and look at all of the unrest and the chaos and the uncertainties and just the rhetoric and what all's going on, I'm just thinking, start wringing our hands and stewing and fretting. And there's a peace in knowing God's still in control. And whatever happens is going to have to pass through his fingers. He has got to allow it to happen. Now, he allows bad things to happen, but it's got to go through his hands. And I'm glad that he's got he's in control. And I've heard a lot said before, that a lot of times the devil, he's down there, he's a shoveling coal in the furnace and trying to turn up the heat, and he's just shoveling like crazy, trying to get things hotter and hotter and hotter here on planet Earth. But yet at the same time, God has got his hand on the thermostat, and God controls the heat. And so everything the devil does or anybody else does has got to go through God's fingers. And we can take hope and courage in that as we look in these tumultuous days that we are in. So with those thoughts in mind, kind of just a very brief getting up to speed here. We've got the three Hebrew men. By the way, did anybody else catch last time about my getting messed up on the ages of these guys? How many people caught that last time and I didn't? All right, I see two. I started off the week before talking about, when we go into chapter 3, there has been anywhere from 20, 25, 30 years have passed during that time. And then that was two Sundays back. Now last Sunday, I said something about, now bear in mind, these guys are just teenagers, or just after teenagers. They're about, and a lot of times, it's hard to sort through the dates and the times and stuff, because all these guys don't necessarily agree. They're pretty close. But on that one, I went back in my notes and tried to find it, and I could not find where I had said that in my notes. And again, that is a situation where, I'm always working ahead. And I get chapter 3 and chapter 4, things, or 5, whatever, I get it confused. And I wind up mixing the two together, and they're not supposed to be mixed together. But anyway, at that time, there has been 20 to 25 years of time has passed. These guys are no longer teenagers, as I stated last time. And I had some people bring that to my mind last time, and I thought that was interesting. But anyway, these guys now, they're probably in their early to mid 40s, when this is taking place, the fiery furnace. And we're getting ready to, in the next chapter, we're getting ready to jump ahead another 30 years. So anyway, but I found that interesting. But yeah, there's some people caught in it. And as I'm going through my notes, I thought, when I said that, where is it in my notes? It wasn't, because I had been working and developing the chapters ahead, and they're talking in about the time span that's taking place. So anyway, and I remember, Tracy, last Sunday you had a comment out of the book of Jeremiah, and you were telling that to me, and it was good thoughts. Do you remember what that was, that you could share that with our group? I'm kind of catching you off the spot here. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Precedents, and these,
Thank you, Tracy. That was good, because I didn't know that. And a lot of times we lose track of the fact that a lot of these, all these Old Testament, a lot of these guys are all living in the same time, in the same day. And we keep thinking it's a chronological event. The Bible is not written chronologically at all. And a lot of times these guys all lived at the same time, and they're all writing their books at the same time. And yet, and like he said, these guys were thrown in Nebuchadnezzar's fire. This was not the only time. Yeah, like he said, he's right. This was kind of a common practice, you know, to alert the people. But they would throw them in a fiery furnace. These furnaces were used for making brick, you know, and tile and different things back in there. They had clay that they made the bricks out of. And these were actually kilns used for making these bricks. And they were big. They just threw them in a fire. And that took care of them. And it set a precedence for somebody coming along behind, you know. You don't mess with the king, folks. You don't mess with the king. So, anyway. Okay, it's time to get on with our lesson here this morning. But I appreciate those comments. And I have people come up to me all the time after Sunday school class. Say, you know, I thought about something during class, but I just hated to mention it. So I'll tell you about it now, you know. Well, these are good thoughts. And please, if you have a thought or a comment or something, please, I encourage you. You know, because the rest of class misses out on it. I get in on it, but there's times that I probably might state something incorrectly, and I need to be corrected. So I'll try to correct it if I am. But anyway, okay. Here's our scene. The Nebuchadnezzar's built his image. He's made this decree that people are supposed to bow down and worship the image he made. Probably, it doesn't say specifically, he probably made the image of himself, and would be what most of the authors would agree to. But anyway, they're supposed to bow down and worship it. It is a sense of showing homage and total devotion to Nebuchadnezzar. And again, at this time, he is thinking of himself as a god. And a lot of these guys do that. And I keep thinking, even in today, it seems like a lot of these rulers, I don't know if they call themselves God or not, but some of them have and do. They're just all wrapped up in themselves. Anyway, here's this image. Nebuchadnezzar's brought in the band, all the musicians and everybody, and as soon as you hear the band play, you're supposed to bow down and worship my image. And worship it, pay homage to it, bow down to it. And these three Hebrews, they didn't do it. And so now there's some guys are peeking, some of the wise men, and they tell Nebuchadnezzar about it. And Nebuchadnezzar, he gets mad, and he had to bring these three guys up. And so here these three guys are, they're standing in front of Nebuchadnezzar, in front of everybody. And they say there was probably over 1,000 people was there. You know, all of his government officials, everybody except Daniel, he was not there. And we don't know why. But here these guys are, and now King Nebuchadnezzar says, all right, guys, they said, is it true? He asked them, is it true? One of the authors said that he's probably cooled down some. You know, at first he just flies into a rage, says, bring these guys up. Then they say he might have calmed down a little bit because he had high respect for these guys. And so he said, you know what, is it true? He gave them a chance to say, no, that isn't true. But he asked, is it true? But then he said, maybe if they said, no, it's not true, maybe he'd just forget the whole thing, let them off the hook, and everybody would live happily ever after. But anyway, they did not say that's not true. But anyway, then the king says, all right, now we're going to play music again. We're going to play it just especially for you three guys. And we're all watching. And when that music starts, you guys go ahead and you bow down and worship the image. Or else you're going to be cast into the fiery furnace. So here these three guys stand. And they're standing alone, the three of them. So with those thoughts in mind, let's go ahead and read. Let's start with verse 12, we actually left off at verse 16, I think it was, yeah. We left off at 16, but to get up to speed here, let's go back to 12, and we will read 12 through 18. So who would read those verses for us this morning? 12 through 18, chapter 3. I look back and seeing Caleb's hand up in the air back there. I thought, well, maybe he's going to read it for us. So anyway, John, go ahead and read it for us, John. Yeah, chapter 3. I think I got it right this time.
There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought those men. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said to them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, that all kinds of music, fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour in the midst of the burning fire and furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver thee out of mine hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, who we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, but worship that golden image which thou hast set up.
Okay, thank you, John. So here's the scenario that we're in this morning, that we're studying this morning. And in verse 16, and I'll just pick it up from there, it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said, O king, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. Now that term, we are not careful, I always thought it meant, you know, we have made some serious deliberation about this. You know, we didn't, I thought that was kind of the way of what that states. But it says we are not careful in it. And the authors all seem to agree that, you know, we really don't even have to think about this thing. This idea is so preposterous, so ridiculous, we're not even going to waste any time thinking about it. We already know what we're going to do. You know, so I had the authors disagreed with me on the take of what that means. And so I thought it meant that they were really deliberate. And they thought it over with, but anyway, you know, King, we don't have to think about this again. We're not even be careful about it. We already know what we're going to do. You know, just bang. Talk about purposing in your heart. Their point was that this demand was so far from their normal way of thinking that they really didn't have time to spend much time pondering or deliberating about it. We already know what we're going to do, you know. And their commitment to Yahweh was so rock solid they would not consider doing anything to offend him. Our faith is rock solid in God, and we're not even going to give this a second thought. They would remain forever faithful to God. These three men may have been employed by Nebuchadnezzar, but they did not serve the false gods of Babylon, and they are not going to worship his image. And they make that very clear at the end of verse 18. They had confidence that God's deliverance was possible. Okay, they had confidence it was possible. But they also realized martyrdom was possible. In fact, like what Tracy said this morning, they knew they were standing true to God. These other guys, they went to the fire furnace because God did it, because they were, it was strange fire, you might say, or strange worship, worshiping in the wrong way. But anyway, come what may, they would never worship false gods. That was ingrained into them so deeply, they decided we're not going to bend a bit. They firmly believed that God could deliver them, but they would trust him even if he didn't. Now, folks, that's character. That's godliness. And, folks, I wish I had that kind of character. You know, I keep saying, Lord, I'm weak. Help me to be strong. And I keep thinking, one of these days we may be facing this same type of a situation. We may have to stand up and take a stand for the Lord. And then are we going to be strong or are we going to waffle? Are we going to waver? Put ourselves in their shoes. An important lesson for us: we should maintain faith in God even when our circumstances remain difficult. Powerful lesson there. We might be going through some tough times, trying times. And, you know, and a lot of times, God, why are you doing this to me? I don't deserve this. I'm trying to live for you, and yet this is a thanks I get. You know, we're supposed to trust God, remain firm. And that's hard to do. It's easy to say, but it's hard to live by. Let's turn to Habakkuk chapter 3. And to help you guys out a little bit, I got a note here. It's 55 pages to the right. And to help clarify things, it's right before the book of Zephaniah. So that'll help out a lot. Habakkuk chapter 3. Give people a chance to get there. Habakkuk chapter 3, and it's the last three verses of the book, you might say, verses 17 through 19. And everybody got it? Okay. I put a cheat thing up here. I got a tab, but I could flip to right to it. So, all right. So who would read those verses for us? How about somebody different that doesn't normally read at all in this class? Somebody different. Some brave soul. Okay, Risa? Okay, thank you. Habakkuk here is saying, you know, everything can fall apart around me. Everything could turn bad, crops fail, you know, livestock, whatever, everything going bad. And even if things are turning bad and sour on me, yet will I trust in God. He is my rock and my salvation. And folks, there's just a powerful lesson there for us. And even when things are bad, and maybe things have remained bad for a long time, and we keep struggling, we keep fighting, we want to give up, we want to throw in the towel, say, why, God, I'm tired of this, you know. We need to continue to trust in God and trust and know that his ways are higher than our ways. His ways are best. And there's just a lot of times that's hard to accept. It's hard to live by. The Hebrews, they had these internal convictions about God and about serving idols. They had been taught the Word of God, and they knew that they were how they were to respond in a certain manner based upon the truth of God. They knew what they were supposed to do. They were convicted. They would not compromise no matter what the external pressures were. What virtue? Lord, give me that kind of virtue. It wasn't dependent on whether or not they got their miracle. It didn't matter whether they got delivered or not. They were going to trust in God anyway. They would accept God's will even if it meant death rather than be idolatrous. Again, the conviction of these three. If there's anything we can give this world, it's that kind of a spirit. And folks, the only time the world is going to see that kind of a spirit has got to come out of our churches. It's not going to come from a government, or it's not going to come from outside the church. It's got to come from the church. We are the crux of what we're talking about here for this area of the world. It's an uncompromising, unflinching integrity that says, I will stand true to my God even if it costs me my life. That's conviction. But yet we bow, don't we? I mean, I'm quoting one of the authors here. And we bow, don't we, all the time to the 20th century idols to gain whatever we want to gain among the people of this world. We bow. We waffle. We're weak. They knew the blindness of this heathen king. The three knew the blindness of Nebuchadnezzar. They knew their explanations were useless. There's no sense of trying to explain our convictions to him. You know, he's an egomaniac. He's threatening to kill us. There's no sense us wasting our breath. They simply committed themselves to God. And just like Job in Job 13:15, they said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Yet will I trust him. And folks, that's integrity. That's conviction. They knew what happened to their bodies was not the issue, but that their soul had to be riveted on the truth of God. And folks, this is for us. It's an uncompromising life that will not bow to any idol, no matter what the cost. No matter what the cost. The idol of popularity, the idol of comfort, the idol of fame, the idol of respectability in the world. Folks, that's the idols that we put up before us a lot of times. None of those idols should make us bow. There will be no compromise for the one who stands like this. And at the end of, verse 18 anyway, and we're just wrapping this section up here, it says, we will not serve thy gods, nor worship your image. They just flat told the king right to his face, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. And the musicians, they had their instruments already, but you know what? They never got to play again. They didn't get to play the second verse. Just the first verse is all they got. Because now Nebuchadnezzar flies into a rage. So we'll pick that up now, and let's go ahead and read verses 19 through 23. And who'd read 19 through 23 for us, please? Delbert? Okay, thank you. So, they're cast into the fiery furnace. Nebuchadnezzar was a sad example of unrestrained human arrogance. And that's a character trait that God hates. He hates arrogance. He hates pride. God says that the prideful will be abased, but the humble will be exalted. And we're going to see that. This is not the first time people were incinerated in these furnaces. That's what Tracy was talking about this morning. This has happened before. This was a practice the Babylonians used from time to time. The three had publicly defied his authority, and now this brought public consequences. It's all public. It's all out in the open. It's all out for everybody to see. And Nebuchadnezzar's doing this for an example for all the rest of them out there that might be thinking about not obeying him. Not worshiping him, not giving him the homage that he felt that he was due. And this was, you know, again, it's a public example Don't mess with me. Burning them alive would provide a public example for anyone thinking about defying his authority in the future. He was so angry that he ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than normal. Okay, that's kind of a strange thing, 7 times hotter than normal. Okay, where is 7 times? How do they know where to set the thermostat? Bible scholars have noted that the number 7 in the Bible often indicates completeness or perfection. And so they're saying that this may just be a metaphorical way of saying as hot as it can get. And that is probably a pretty good rendering of what that actually means. Because how would you know where 7 times hotter is? Anyway, but they got her just as hot as they could possibly get it. And so, now in verse 20, talking about these, they have excavated in that area, and they have excavated, and they have found some of these furnaces. And they know the design, what they look like and everything. And basically they say these furnaces, they were actually built, a lot of them were built into a hill. Into a hill. You build them into a hill. And excavations show that there was a door on the top and a side door at the ground level. And the side door ground level was for ventilation and for the removal of ashes from these furnaces. And so you got to get in there and you got to clean them out, but yet you put stuff in down through the top, through a hole in the top. And that seems to be, so it says the use would be cast into the fire through the top door. Through the top door. But yet victims could be observed through either door, but probably through the side door. Now, I don't have any idea how they could see inside, but we know they could because Nebuchadnezzar is watching, and he's looking. And he's looking, and he's saying he can see these guys walking around in there. So he can see in there. Normally, and I'll just go to verse 21, then these men were bound in their coats, their hose, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. They tied them up. And that always seems funny. Why would you tie them up? You know, where are they going to go? You know, anyway, they tied them up. And normally, a person would be stripped naked before being cast into the furnace. That was their typical way of doing it, you know. But the king was in such a rage and a fury that he just had them bound fully clothed. He's so furious, you get them in there as fast as you can. Their clothing would be highly flammable and it would immediately flare up. So they were tied up, so there was no possible way of escape. Well, it'd be kind of hard to escape out of a burning fiery furnace when you're dropped in through the hole in the top and doors closed on the side. I don't know. Anyway, they tied them up. He wanted to make sure they couldn't get away. There would be no danger of the men throwing the youths into the furnace if it was set at the normal temperature. They normally did. I mean, this happened before. And these guys never been killed before that are throwing them in. Nebuchadnezzar must not have anticipated that anyone near the top of the superheated furnace would be incinerated as hot as the hot flames burst up through the opening. Apparently, this thing was so hot, when they opened the door so they could throw them in, the fire shot up through the thing and actually killed them all, every one of them, because that thing was turned so hot. And in verse 23, it says, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound. Okay, they fell down, which gives credence to the thought that they were put in through the opening in the top. And again, excavations prove the Bible. You know, they prove these things are right. And all the way through this thing, there is excavations, so they've gone, they've dug. They have found all kind of things that would verify the validity of the book of Daniel. And there has been skeptics on this book. We're going to see more about that. But there's skeptics on this book that says this thing is so outrageous, this book. There is absolutely no way any of it can be true. You know, and some of these dreams and stuff. Did you have a question?
I had a comment.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'll wait for you.
I was thinking maybe back in those days, when he said make it seven times hotter, maybe they thought that putting seven times more fuel in the furnace made it seven times hotter. I wondered if they just put more fuel in it, seven times the amount of whatever they used to burn.
It could be.
And that was seven times more, and that would make those flames.
Yeah. I'm sure it did. It sounded like it.
It's a quick thing, but whether or not that's true, I was thinking martyrs today in other countries are losing their life, and we think that it doesn't, you know, you made a comment, some day it may happen here, some time that may happen. Well, I don't remember the name of the place, but it did happen.
Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we think that, you know, sometimes that, you know, it doesn't happen here, but it did. Mm-hmm. And that was quick.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking how quick that might happen to them, but that was quick for her.
Yeah.
And she had a decision to make on the spur of the moment, probably knowing that she was going to get shot and point the gun out of her head.
Yeah, they say a lot of times these terrorists, they go down, are you a Christian, are you a Christian, are you a Christian? And I mean, if they say yes, bang, you know, and are you a Christian? They just move on down the line, you know. And yeah. So I guess I cut you off. Yeah. And folks, I really think that we need to be prepared. We need to be asking God. We need to be praying for our nation and pray for the nations of the world, that we could bring some kind of sense of common sense back again. I don't know where, whatever happened to common sense. It's gone. But anyway. So, any other questions or comments before we move on? Okay. You're grinning. Are you thinking about saying something? Okay. She back there just grinning, and I thought, but she won't hold her hand up. She's one of them the last week that cornered me, all right? Yeah, I guess you can have a little tiny flame, or you can have a great big flame that shoots up through the tops of, through the hole, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I think fire would be the same temperature with a little fire or a big fire. But John, you're lighting up here.
If I remember correctly, it wasn't God that said it was seven times hotter. It was Nebuchadnezzar that ordered it to be seven times hotter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they may have.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't God that said it was seven times harder.
No.
It was Nebuchadnezzar that ordered it.
Yeah.
Seven times harder.
Yeah.
So okay. God may have known that it wasn't really all that much harder seven times.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I see Sharla again.
Right.
I have tried to envision that myself as I'm going through this lesson. How in the world could he see in? Where was he? You know, and I don't know. They said, in fact, I think we're going to hit on that here in just a second, a little bit. But the assumption was that they could either, from a distance, could look in through the top hole or through the side hole. They say it is more likely he's looking through the side door rather than down through the top, because the flames would be shooting up, you know. And so anyway, probably looking through the side door. And but he would be back away where he could look. But obviously he can see in. The Word of God says he could see what was going on. So he could see. I don't know how, but they say probably through an opening in the side door. And we're getting ready to come to that here in just a second here. So I appreciate these comments this morning. You know it. Okay. Let's go ahead and read verses 24 and 25. And who would read those for us? 24 and 25. Okay. Okay, thank you. We got 3 minutes. Okay, here it says, a king, he is seated at a comfortable distance, able to see through a hole what was going on. And that's about all it says. He was astonished and rose up in haste. And he asked, didn't we throw 3 men in? And they answered, true, O king. We threw 3 men in. Verse 25, Nebuchadnezzar saw 4 things. He's asking the question, are my eyes playing tricks on me? He's looking in here and he sees 4 things. Now he sees 4 men, not 3. All 4 were loose. They were not being harmed. All 4 men standing up and walking around, enjoying each other's company without even trying to find the exit. That's an author's take. These guys having a good time of fellowship down there in the midst of this fire. So, the 4th person had the appearance of, as some translations say, as a son of the gods. That is some of the translations. And this would probably be his thinking here. Is a son of the gods, plural. Now, and I have a question about that, because the word God is capitalized at the end of chapter 25. So I'm just going to throw out some ideas here, and I'm not going to be dogmatic and make it an opinion, all right? But they believed that their gods had sons. And so some of the authors here are saying that they believe that this is maybe one of the gods' sons in there. And so... But again, I come back and note the capital G. You know, Delbert, does your translation have a capital G for the word God at the end of 25?
Yes, son of God.
Okay. Because, and see, the theory is on that. Okay. Let me just back up and not get ahead of myself, and our time is up. This 4th person was likely a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ. That is what most biblical scholars say. That was a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. To Nebuchadnezzar, it appeared to be a supernatural person or a heavenly being who was saving the other 3. That's what his take was. The answer is very clear. The God of the youths had delivered them. It was God, the God of the universe, the only God, is the one that delivered them. The one who created the universe maintains absolute control over the elements in the universe, including fire. God's in charge of fire too. His control and the effects of the fire would have been in perfect keeping with his divine power. God is big enough that he can save these guys out of the fire. And God is just as good when he doesn't heal as when he does. And that's something we need to ponder on. God is just as, and a lot of times we want God to heal. And see, again, I think I'm going to come to this in a minute, but I just want to state it right at the end of this thing. But, lost my thought. It happens, folks, when you get bald and gray-headed. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar actually knew nothing. Well, I better hadn't say that. He wasn't, unless Daniel would have been, okay, let me just not even say that, because I'm all of a sudden I had some other thoughts that might I might be getting ready to say something wrong. Okay, God is just as good when he doesn't heal as when he does. God is just as loving when he doesn't provide all that we think we need as he is when he does. God is just as gracious when he says no as when he says yes. God is God, and God is to be uncompromisingly worshiped, and whatever he does is his business. We need to accept these truths in our lives, folks. We might sum it up by saying, in God's case, death is just as good as life. Those are some kind of deep thoughts to end with. And as what I was getting ready to say, Nebuchadnezzar probably doesn't, I was going to say, he probably doesn't know anything about the Son of God. It talks about as looks like the Son of God. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, at this particular point, really didn't believe in God, and so he probably didn't know much about the Son of God. And the reason I stopped and wasn't going to say anything, but yet I did, because Daniel, all this time, he's had about 25 years with Daniel, and you think Daniel's been sitting idly by and not telling Nebuchadnezzar about the true God, about God? You sure he? I'm sure Daniel has been preaching to him all this time. Because Daniel is not one that's going to be sitting idly by. And so maybe he did know a little bit about the Son of God, the one that would be coming. Son of God hadn't came yet in human form. And anyway, so we'll end there because we are 2.5 minutes overdue. We better ahead and take time for questions or comments because we're getting late here. So let's go ahead and close the word of prayer. Dear Father, Lord, help us to learn from the experience of these three. And Lord, from the book of Daniel. And Lord, there's more to come, a lot more to come in this book. And Father, just help us to be diligent in applying these lessons. And Lord, realize that you are in charge. You're in control. And Lord, there's a lot of times bad things happen to us we don't understand. And Lord, and we think it's unfair. We think we don't deserve it. We get angry at you. And Lord, and we blame you. And Lord, that's wrong. Help us, Lord, to realize that, Lord, you love us. And you're there. And these trials that we go through, these difficulties, are there for a purpose. And Lord, you're trying to mold our lives and to build us to become more Christ-like. And Father, help us to take that and be able to accept it and trust in you. I will still trust in God, even if he slay me, type of an attitude. We just pray now that you'll be with Pastor as he brings a morning message. I pray, Lord, you'll open our hearts, speak to us through your word. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. You're dismissed 6 minutes less, or 4 minutes less you normally do.